Jazz, 91.9 WCOK, Atlanta's Jazz Station. Jamal Ahmed with the Soul of Jazz on this Wednesday afternoon. It was classic music coming from Mr. Lee Morgan, and he called that one Sidewinder. And I tell you, that is a piece of jazz music that has changed the entire world and the game of jazz music. And the bassist on that tune, I am so honored to say that we actually have him live and direct here in the studio. Will you please put your hands together for the legendary bassist, Bob Crenshaw. Good afternoon, sir.
Thank you.
Yes.
Good afternoon.
Good to see you.
Thank you for playing that record. It brings back a lot of memories.
Yeah, yeah. And you actually, I'm sure you got some stories to tell about that particular record.
A few things. One of the things about that record, it was the last tune that we recorded for that date. We had recorded all the other tunes, and we needed one more tune. And Lee Morgan went in the bathroom, and it was kind of a rough time for Lee at that point with drugs. And we thought maybe he was in the bathroom, you know, using drugs. But when he came out after 15 minutes, that was the tune that he wrote in 15 minutes. He came out, and it was a hit. It was a big hit for Blue Note. One of the other things was, with that kind of feel, like if it would have been Herbie Hancock or McCoy Tyner or one of those players, but Barry Harris is a bebop player. And I remember Barry saying to me, "I've never been on a hit before, and I'm going to play as funky as I can," you know. So it was the whole group there that day was really wonderful, but we had a good time. It was really enjoyable, and thank you again for playing that
oh,
record.
No. Well, thank you for laying in the pocket on that one.
Well, that's what I do. You know, that's what I try to do, anyhow.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, that record really changed a lot of things.
Yeah.
And you were part of that whole movement that was really a new phase in jazz. You also did a lot of work, and you still do a lot of work with the legendary Sonny Rollins. You've been playing with him for, well,
55 years.
Wow. Talk about your experience with...
In that 55 years, that's longer than all my marriages. I've been married 3 times. That's longer than all of them. So it seems like a lifetime, you know?
Exactly. Well, how is it working with the legendary Sonny Rollins?
It's great. It's been really great for me, you know. Sonny... I played with Sonny in 1958, the first Playboy Jazz Festival. And I played with a friend of mine, a guy named Walter Perkins, who was a drummer. And I didn't know Sonny. I had heard Sonny before with Max Roach in different groups. And Sonny asked Walter to get a bass player that he enjoyed playing with, and we were going to do the festival, just trio, bass, drums, and saxophone. So the drummer, Walter, called me and asked me if I would play with it, the festival, and I said yes. And then after I said yes, I started to think, oh, maybe I made a big mistake. You know, I was hoping that there would have been a piano player or somebody else there that I could lean on, but just bass, drums, and piano. I said, I don't know whether I'm ready for it, but I had already accepted the gig. And from that time, we played the festival. And I just remember Sonny, I hadn't met Sonny. We were fourth on the festival, fourth group to play. And by the time the third group played, it was a Dixieland group. And they played for 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes. And all the people at the festival were waiting for Sonny because Sonny hadn't been out in years. So he showed up after the Dixieland group played for a half an hour. The people were drugged. They were tired of hearing the Dixieland group. And Sonny, we came out and we tore it up. To find out, Sonny had been there long before that, but he waited for the people to get pissed at the Dixieland group, and we ate it up. Now, Sonny played a tune, and he changed keys. I forget the tune. And when he changed keys and went in another key, I went right with him. And Sonny said at that moment, he knew that I was his bass player. So I've been with Sonny for 55 years. Sonny and I have talked maybe 20, I tell people we've talked maybe 20 minutes worth. Because we just go on the stage and play. I don't ask what he's going to play. I don't really say anything but, hello, Sonny, let's go. And that's been our relationship. So I guess silence is sometimes is gold, you know?
It sounds like y'all have some type of telekinesis going.
We do. Mm. And he knows. I never ask all of the rest of the guys in the band, you know, well, Sonny, you're going to play this one. What are you going to play? I don't ask anything. As soon as he stars, he hits one note, I know where he's going.
Wow, wow. If you're just tuning in, we're speaking with the legendary bassist Bob Cranshaw, speaking of his time playing with so many legends. And you also did something really remarkable, sir, kind of in the late 60s, early 70s, where, you know, the way that bass was being played in jazz music was standard upright bass. And you were one of the first bassists to actually kind of co-opt the electric bass and start playing the electric bass. Talk about that time. Talk about when that change happened and the reaction from your peers.
Well, the change happened. I was doing the David Frost TV show, and I was on my way to work, and I was in the cab, and I was getting out of the cab, and a truck hit the cab, smashed the cab, and so I had a back injury. So it was hard. Every time I tried to play the string bass, the muscles of my back would tighten up. Mm. So I just played the electric. A bass was a bass for me, and I know most jazz players don't like electronics to begin with, but I had to work, and it was a bass. So I just started playing it. I didn't really think about it, and, you know, and I knew guys were, especially jazz players, were really disappointed. Mm-hmm. Then I started to play it. I would walk in a club with the electric bass, and I would kind of see the guys frown. But they know when I hit the stage with it, the string bass, it was out. It was over. Mm. You know, as soon as I pull out the electric, the string bass, because you can hear it and you can feel it.
Right.
And so the string bass, so guys were really disappointed. But after a while, then they begin to enjoy. So I do a lot with the electric, of course, a lot of TV shows and so forth. Most of that is with, you know, Sesame Street and all of those things were with the electric, Saturday Night Live. And
you were the first bassist on Saturday Night Live.
Yes.
Wow.
I was with the original group.
Oh, incredible. Let's go back to Sesame Street because, you know, being a child of the 70s, I grew up watching Sesame Street, and that was a really important time for a lot of young people growing up in that era because we learned so much music off of television shows like Sesame Street. But I do remember those bass lines being extra funky, and it got me deeper into understanding the bass, and I eventually went on to play bass and tuba myself. But talk about doing stuff with Sesame Street and Electric Company and 321 Contact.
It's funny, with Sesame Street, I was hired, I was playing with a guy who was the musical director named Joe Raposo. I got a call to do a job, an off-Broadway show by Chuck Israel, the bassist, called me and said, do you mind doing this off-Broadway show for me? I'm getting ready to move to California, and would you do this show? So I said, sure, you know. And I went and I heard the band play, and there was nothing, you know, really big about it. The piano player, Joe Raposo, played everything in his left hand. So it was like me listening to him. I said, well, he really don't need a bass because he's playing all of it in his left hand. That was the way he played. So after listening to him for a few minutes, I say, well, look, I say, what I'm going to do, I say, I'm going to make it feel so good. To him, he go take his left hand and stick it in his pocket. You know, that was my feeling, and it ended up happening. And we had a love affair with Sesame Street and the Electric Company and 321. All of these shows, I got through that experience with Joe. He never had to say anything about what he was going to play or any of the music that he put in front of me. I just played it. We, you know, and we had, it was a nice experience, a beautiful experience for me. But most of the things I've done over the years, I read, I'm a great reader of music, but I play by ear. I learn to play. So if you play something, you know, my teachers used to play stuff and tell me when I studied piano, they would play my lesson and say, now come back, you know, and I want you to play this. Well, I already heard it. I'd go out and play baseball all week and come back and play the same thing that the teacher played because I heard it. I knew it, you know. So my experiences have been I read, but I listen.
Wow. And you know, when I look at your repertoire, when I look at all the people, I mean, I'm just looking online at all the names that you've played with, from Ella Fitzgerald to Thelonious Monk to Lee Morgan, Wes Montgomery, McCoy Tyner, Sonny Rollins, Horace Silver, Wayne Shorter. I mean, and that's only like a small piece of the folk that you've played with. I mean, you've literally played with a who's who, a veritable who's who in the world of jazz music. What is that one takeaway from all of those years of playing with everyone? What's the one thing that you've taken away from playing with everyone?
I'm a lucky so-and-so. That's the first thing. I'm fortunate. I'm blessed. I feel blessed to have worked with all of these people and for them to feel, have confidence in me to be able to do what they, you know, what they need. I mean, I played with Peggy Lee, all of the singers, Frank Sinatra. I came to Atlanta with Frank Sinatra years ago. I don't even remember the hall that we played, but I did some recordings with Frank Sinatra, and he asked me to come here, and he flew the whole orchestra from New York here to play a concert with him. So
Wow, that's incredible. Well, what words would you impart on a young musician that listening right now and wants to have a long career such as yourself? Because, I mean, I'm sure a career like yours is full of peaks and valleys and a lot of different things flowing in and out, ebbs and flows. But what type of wisdom would you impart on someone young out there?
Well, for me, they've all been peaks. I've had few valleys.
Well, that's beautiful.
And so I'm lucky.
Yes.
You know, I've
yes.
been able to give, I've, over my career, I've been able to give 10 or 15 other bass players work through stuff that was coming through me because I was offered so much stuff. I was giving it away. I mean, the Tonight Show and all of those shows, the bass player John Williams, who left New York and went with the show in California, they called me, and John Williams was doing another TV show for me and NBC, and Doc Severance had called me and said, look, I want you to come with the band. But I was doing the David Frost TV show, so there was no reason for me to leave one TV show to do another.
Right.
So I gave it to somebody else. So I've been lucky. I'm just lucky. I'm lucky. I'm blessed.
So what can we expect from you in the near future? I mean, I know you're still playing with Mr. Rollins, Sonny Rollins, but what can we expect from you in the near future, sir?
Maybe some silence. You know,
it is golden sometimes.
Yeah, I'm trying to help others now.
Right,
you know,
I'm
a union exec for the Musicians Union, and I try now. I gotta help the younger bass players find work and how to keep work. All of my students, I teach in New York at the New School University, and I have most of my bass students getting their masters. You got to do more than just play. It's got to be a more well-rounded situation because music's have changed. So it's a difference. And what I'm doing now is helping the young bass players in New York. I want them to work. I'm looking out for them now. I already did it, you know. So I want all of them to be better than me. That's what I want. You better play better than me, you know. And that's what I'm looking forward to.
Wow. Words of wisdom from a legend. We're just speaking with the legendary bassist, Bob Cranshaw, who was so kind to stop by and show us some love here at WCLK. We're going to get on out of here, sir. I'm actually going to play a young bassist. We were talking about him earlier, who is immensely inspired by you and your playing, and that's Mr. Marcus Miller.
Yeah.
How do you feel about Marcus Miller?
He's incredible.
What do you like about him?
He can play everything. You know, that's the guy who knows a lot of music.
Right.
And he's beautiful. He's a beautiful spirit.
And do you think that's more important than being a great musician sometimes?
You need all of it.
Right.
I think part of my thing is nobody had any problems. I didn't ask a lot of questions. I went on a gig and I had fun. I just wanted to, I know what I do, and that's what I'm going to do. So I never worried about it. I never doubt myself in what I was doing, and I was able to build a great career. I just love to play. I don't care whom it is. I'll play with anybody that need me.
Wow. Well, it speaks in your discography. It speaks in with all the people that you play with, even our own here in Atlanta, Duke Pearson, who actually went to this university, Clark
That's
Atlanta
my
University.
Man.
And you played on all those seminal Duke Pearson records.
But we played here years ago. They had a thing here, and a lot of the guys came in to play when Duke was sick.
Mm.
We did a thing
wow.
here years ago. Duke was that was my man.
Wow. Well, God bless you, Mr. Crenshaw,
and
you have blessed us so much with your immense talent, and also with what they call the low end. You have really showed us what the low end theory is all about.
I'm the low end. I love it.